I'm getting
trapped. What is going on, Devil fans? Welcome back to the Trap Podcast. I am your host, Bill Botch, and it has been a very long time since we've spoke. For that, I apologize. I've had a lot going on, all good things, so nothing to be concerned about, but my time has been very limited, and to be honest with you, I kind of found the end of the Devil's season very disappointing and uninspiring, so I didn't feel the need to constantly come on here and bitch and complain about the team. And it's one of those things to where if you don't have anything good to say, you're better off not saying anything at all. But what I wanted to do was, it's been so long, I figured we would have basically, I would have an open conversation with you guys, and I'll let you know where my head is at, because I do feel like the upcoming weeks are crucial to the development and the success of the team moving forward. So I did feel it was necessary to share my thoughts and to see what you guys think as well. We could get into, I'm going to just sum things up. And like I said, there's not going to be much of a format to this episode, but I wanted to give you an idea as to what my, how I felt towards the end of the year. I think all of us were in the same place where we were really disappointed coming off of a record-breaking regular season from 2022-23. I think Tom Fitzgerald waited way too long to make an adjustment to the team. And I think that Lindy Ruff, the leash was way too long. And if the Devils would have made an adjustment earlier, whether it was a coaching change or a goaltending change, we could have been in the mix to fight for a wild card spot. And that was something that I blame Tom Fitzgerald for. Fitzgerald has made a ton of good moves with the team, especially the team-friendly contracts that he signed to our core pieces. But if I'm going to call it like it is, I thought I kind of put the blame of this season on him. He went into the season knowing that we didn't have goaltending. And when he saw that Vitek and Schmid played as poorly as they did in the beginning of the year, you would have thought that he would have kind of been a little quicker to make a move, and he didn't. And I thought that that cost us a lot of games. On top of that, the play of the team was uninspiring. I thought they didn't play with tempo. They did not play with the same kind of speed they played with the year before. There's a lot to go over. I mean, we had missing pieces on our back end when, you know, you let Severson go and Graves go, and you knew that you were going to have a lot of youth on the blue line. And that was something that we didn't know. I thought the Devils would take a step back in that regard. It's hard to have a guy like Ball, Luke Hughes, and when Dougie went down, you had Nemitz come up and play, and that is a lot of youth on the blue line, and that would be hard for any team to overcome. But what really was the most frustrating thing to me was the lack of energy and the lack of passion that the team played with for most of the year. And that I blame on Lindy Ruff, but I also blame it on the leaders of the core group. So a Nico Hischier and a Jack Hughes. I mean, I think all of this comes from the top down. And I thought that they did not play with the intensity that they played with the previous year. And we've seen this happen with young teams where they make the playoffs and they have this really great season, a young team who's on the cusp of breaking out and becoming a force in the NHL. And then they have this sudden letdown, you know, like let's call it a sophomore slump, for instance. And I think that after you have a great season like that and people are talking you up in the off season, you know, Vegas has you as one of the favorites to win the Stanley Cup. People are expecting you to take the next step. That there's this kind of like entitlement that comes with that, to where the players automatically think that they're going to be better the following year. They think that we're, you know, a team to reckon with moving forward. And they kind of lose that sense of urgency and the sense of, I don't know what you would call it, just frustration of not winning, to where they didn't push play the same way. They weren't willing to do the same things that they were willing to do in the 2022-23 season. There was a bunch of questionable moves made in the beginning of the season, even when the team was healthy. So obviously the team fought the health bug, the injury bug. It definitely affected the outcome of the season. But to me, it was head-scratching when Luke Hughes is quarterbacking the first power play after the season that Dougie Hamilton had the previous year. I mean, the amount of game-tying and game-winning goals and the amount of pucks that Dougie is able to get through. That's why you signed him, is to be to a $9 million deal. It was to be the anchor and the quarterback of your power play and to really play downhill. The Devils severely missed him. And I don't think that that was talked about enough this year, was missing the presence of Dougie Hamilton. People like to pick on Dougie because of his defensive play in his own zone, which, it's not horrible, but it's not great, as is with most other defensemen who are known for their offensive play. So the Dougie really thrives when he can play downhill and he could push play. And you could see that in the analytics, that when Dougie Hamilton is on the ice, typically the team is playing offense. And that's something that he's able to contribute from the back end that you really aren't going to get from a Luke Hughes or a Nemitz at this point in their career. They're obviously going to be pushing play pretty hardcore as they continue to grow, but the Devils definitely miss that. And, you know, there, we can go down the line. I thought, to me, Dawson Mercer was very concerning. You know, Dawson Mercer has always had that dog in him. Remember the Dawson Mercer dog tags, and he did not look like he had the same giddy up in his step, and he was not playing as physical as normal. Timo Meier got off to a very, very slow start. He was awful for the first half of the season. We come to find out that he has two MCL injuries. He's got an abdomen injury. He's got to have shoulder surgery. You get into Jack Hughes. He had shoulder surgery. They finally get rid of Lindy Ruff when it's too late. And what was really pissed me off was the league and the division, the Eastern Conference in particular, gave the Devils every chance to make the playoffs. Like, nobody really ran away with it. The Flyers fell apart. The Islanders were just kind of floating around, hanging in there. They made a coaching change and got Patrick Waugh on that team. You always get that coaching change bump. And if we would have got it a little bit earlier, I think that with the talent that we have on the team, and then you got Timo Meier started to go, I thought that the Devils probably could have made the playoffs. But Fitzgerald he took way too long to make a decision. Travis Green becomes the interim coach. I was happy that Lindy Ruff was let go. I wish Lindy Ruff the best. I think Lindy Ruff is a very good man, and he's a smart hockey guy. But I think he brought the Devils to even when the Devils had their great year, I thought there were a lot of very questionable moves that he made. And I think anybody that's a hardcore fan of any team questions the decisions that the coaches make and even the general managers make sometimes. So that's normal. But I mean, the excessive use of Brendan Smith, some of the goaltending decisions, you know, you go back to Miles Wood and, I don't know. I thought there were a lot of questionable decisions that the coaching staff made, even when we were succeeding. And there's always going to be that, so I'm not holding that against him. But we get Travis Green in, and Travis Green, one of his first decisions with the team is to sit Simone Nemitz. And you guys know how high I am on Nemitz. By no means do I think that he is above anybody else as far as shouldn't, you know, have to, he shouldn't have to, I don't know what I'm trying to say here. I'm saying that there's no reason that he shouldn't be able to have to watch games from the press boxes. He's not above that. But I thought that there were a lot of other players on the team who didn't play well. And this may be a very unpopular opinion, but if we're going to talk Devils and I'm going to tell you how I feel, then so be it. I think that the next coach that the Devils have, we're all looking for someone that is going to hold their players more accountable. And Craig Berube is a guy whose name has been floating around and seems to be at the top of the Devils' want list, but he's waiting to see what's going to happen with the Toronto position. You know, it always felt to me like Lindy Ruff owed Jack Hughes. And whether or not that's the truth or not, I have no way of confirming that, but it was Jack Hughes that was outspoken about Lindy Ruff before they had the success in the 22-23 season. And there was always this sense of Lindy Ruff not willing to call out Jack Hughes. And it was almost like he would pick on some of the other players, but he never wanted to call out Jack Hughes. And you could tell that Nico Hischier wasn't necessarily the biggest fan to Lindy Ruff's either. But down the stretch, man, I thought Jack Hughes did not have a very good season. Here's the thing with Hughes. Hughes is not my kind of player. He is by far the most talented player on the Devils when it comes to skating and puck skills. But the thing is, you need more from those kinds of players if your team is going to be good. So, like, if the Edmonton Oilers are going to win the Stanley Cup this year, they're going to need Connor McDavid to really be the best player on the ice every night, or Draisaitl to be the best player on the ice every night. And one of the things that I was really impressed with, and it's something that I think the Devils need direly, is a coach that's willing to call out their best players. And you saw that in the playoff series between Boston and Toronto this year. Jim Montgomery, game six, calls out David Pastrnak, the team's best player, superstar, and says, you need to be better, he needs to be better, and he says it in the media publicly. And Pastrnak doesn't act like a little bitch about it. He's a professional. And what's he do? He goes out and he scores a game-winning goal in game seven. Now, what would happen if Lindy Ruff called out Jack Hughes last year in the playoffs? We don't know. Jack Hughes might be a complete professional and go out and do the same exact thing. I have no way of knowing that. But we won't know that until we have a coach that has enough balls to get the best out of its best players. It's easy to pick on Alexander Holtz. It's easy to pick on a rookie. But the good coaches, they know the buttons to push and when to push them to really get every single ounce out of their best players. And that's the difference between winning a game seven and losing a game seven and losing in the first round and firing your coach or making it onto the second round and having a chance to go play in the conference finals. So obviously, I think that this next coaching hire to me is beyond important, because I think whoever they hire, they're going to give them a little leash. You're going to have 2-3 years minimum. What's crazy is the amount of turnover in the NHL at the coaching position behind the bench. So over the past year and a half, over half the league has turned over. I think it's 17 coaches. And it's because of the cap space. It's because of these no-move clauses. So you can't really move the players around as much as you'd like to. You can't break a whole team down because everybody's kind of cap-strapped. So these teams can't take on players. So they move the coaches. And there's been a lot of retreads. And that's just part of the game. But I do think that all retreads are not the same. You know, if you would have asked me at the beginning of the season what I thought of the Peter Laviolette hire for the Rangers, I would not have been, if I was a Ranger fan, it wouldn't have done anything for me, if I'm being honest. But you look at the way that he's coached that team, it's very impressive. The Rangers are really good, and it's scary. They scare me. They've yet to lose a game in the playoffs. They've won the President's Trophy. Igor Shesterkin looks like arguably the best goaltender on the planet. They're playing very physical. That team's got a mojo. We need them. I mean, we need Florida to beat them. But anyway, screw the Rangers. Let's get into these coaching options, because I do have some thoughts on where the Devils go with their next coach. And I do believe that this is a decision that's going to be made very shortly. So Craig Berube seems to be very high on the Devils list as a potential head coach. Now, here's why Berube is not my top choice. When Berube got fired from St. Louis, Jordan Kyrou came out and didn't have anything nice to say about him, which usually means that he's not the only player. I think the players don't like him. And guess what? The players don't have to like him. He's their boss. He's not their best friend. This is a business. I understand that. But at the same time, the game has changed a lot, and I think it's important to have a coach that your players want to play for. Craig Berube's system does not fit what the Devils roster has. Craig Berube is going to want the Devils to forecheck and play heavy and block shots and do all the things that we saw the St. Louis Blues team that won the Stanley Cup in 2018-2019 do. And all of those things are important to winning a Stanley Cup, no doubt about it. The players are going to have to do some of those things. But Berube's used to playing a heavy game. We are not a heavy team. I do think that there'll be adjustments made to the roster, but to have a guy who is going to rule with an iron fist and ask them to play a completely different brand of hockey than they're used to playing, to me, doesn't make much sense. You look at his record, he had the great Stanley Cup run. In 2020, he went 42-19, very impressive, .662 winning percentage. 2021, they played 56 games. He went 27-20, a .563. 2022, 49-22, another great season, 109 points, a .665 winning percentage. But over the last two seasons, he went 37-38. He was under .500, 81 points. And then through 28 games this year, he went 13-14, under .500, a .482 winning percentage. So is Craig Berube going to be a good coach for somebody this year? Absolutely. I think so. And when I say he's not my first choice, that doesn't mean that I don't think that if the Devils did hire him, he would be a great addition to the team. But I'm saying if I have to pick and choose who I think fit the team the best, he is not my first choice. What I do like about him is he pays attention. He's very big on the fundamentals of the game. And I think that that's something that the Devils need to get back to, because just watching our guys go out there and try to play pond hockey for 60 minutes and think that their talent is going to lead them to W's is just really frustrating. And being a season ticket holder and actually taking the time to drive up to the games and spend money, that's not what I want to watch. I want to watch a team that has some sort of discipline and plays the game the right way. You could still have fun and you could still be creative and use your talent and do the little things correctly. And that's one of the things that really drives me crazy about Jack Hughes. And I'm not just trying to pick up on Jack Hughes, but he's too important to the team and to the team's success to completely be rogue, go rogue all the time and turn the puck over all the time. So I hold him to a higher standard because he's that much better. So that's my point with him. Now, there's two coaches in particular that really stand out to me that I hope are the Devils. I hope that the Devils get to pick. And what's awesome is the Devils have really stepped into shit with their coaching options. I think there could not be a better time for the Devils to make a coaching change and to hire somebody with the amount of options that they have on the table and the quality of the options. So we'll start off with who I think, and it's kind of a 1A, 1B. But to me, I think Jay Woodcroft would be a very, to me, he should be the number one option to be behind the Devils bench starting next season. And you can get into Jay Woodcroft. He's only 47 years old, but the guy has been behind the bench and working as an assistant coach and working as a video coach since 2005. So, I mean, he worked and has been in a locker room with Steve Yzerman and Nick Lidstrom, and he was part of that 2008 Stanley Cup team as well. Then he ends up joining the San Jose Sharks as an assistant coach under Todd McClellan. And you have Joe Thornton, and my point is he's been around a lot of very good players. He is a student of the game. So you figure he's been doing this as a coach since his early 20s. So he ends up becoming the assistant coach for the Edmonton Oilers, aside McClellan. And then he becomes the head coach of the Bakersfield Condors. It's the Oilers AHL team. And while he's behind the bench, the Condors go 105, 71, and 21 during the regular season. And they make it to the playoffs. And then they win their first ever Pacific Division title in 2019. So the Oilers end up firing Dave Tippett in the middle of the season, and they're going to bring up Woodcroft as an interim coach following a successful run. So they bring up Woodcroft. He comes in. It's about halfway through the season. The team goes 26-9-3. Pretty good. I mean, unbelievably good. Not only that, he leads them to the conference finals. Now, nobody's won, you know, and this is going to go with the next guy we talk about. No one's won in the Edmonton organization in forever. So he goes to the conference final. They lose to Colorado. And it's like Colorado is obviously a very impressive, very hard team to play against. And Colorado goes on to win the Stanley Cup. Nothing to be ashamed about. First time coach behind the bench, halfway for the season, they lose to the Stanley Cup champs. Whatever. So they keep him. The next year he comes out, which is last year, 2022-23, he goes 50-20-23. So, I mean, this guy's winning percentage is incredible. He had 109 points last year. 109. In the 38 games that he coached the year before, he had 55 points. So he was on pace for over 110 points. And they lose in the second round to the Vegas Golden Knights. Stanley Cup champions. Nothing to be ashamed about. This year, he gets 13 games into the season and they fire him. They looked awful. They did. The problem was there was a ton of pressure on Edmonton. This is cup or bust. So the problem with Edmonton that we also were very similar is that we don't have goaltending. So they go out, they pay Jack Campbell. Jack Campbell comes in. He couldn't save a beach ball. Jack Campbell was awful. they actually, they had to send him down. They put him on waivers. If they had any kind of goaltending, this team would be at least 500. And after the previous two seasons that they had, if he was 500, I think they would have let him last a little more than 13 games. So this is a guy who's a student of the game. He's been around greats. He's coached under respected coaches in the league. He's been coaching since his 20s. He's won everywhere he's went. And he got a 13-game leash this year and was fired. I think he's also a guy that does pay attention to the details. And what I like about him the most is he respects analytics, but he's also just a gut guy and an old school hockey sense guy as well. So he's a really good combination of both of those. You know, nothing drives me crazier than a guy who's strictly analytic based. And then nothing drives me crazier than a guy who doesn't give a shit about the analytics at all and just continues to throw Brendan Smith out there with Luke Hughes and get caved in every night. There has to be some sort of in-between. You have to be able to look at the numbers and then apply them to what your judgment is of the team and the personnel and how you feel about the game. So Woodcroft, to me, is a good option. Another thing that I kind of like about him is I like coaches who are on their second team. So, sure, I like, you know, if he was to come in and win a Stanley Cup with Edmonton, he wouldn't be available. But sometimes these coaches know, especially a guy like this who had a very small sample size and was successful in the small sample size, he's going to come in. He's going to be coaching for his career too. He knows that if he screws this up with a team like New Jersey that has a lot of talent, it's going to cost him. And when you coach like that, I think a couple things. One, you don't give a shit about the player's feelings because you have to look out to yourself for a certain degree, but also there's a part of it where you want to prove something, and playing and dealing with the media in New Jersey and the fan base in New Jersey is much easier than dealing with the Edmonton Oilers media or the Toronto Maple Leafs media and their fan base, especially because he was coaching literally the greatest player in the world, one of the greatest players ever. That's a lot of pressure to put on a new coach. Coming to a team like New Jersey, where Jack Hughes is definitely a superstar player, but you have a Nico Hischier, you have a Timo Meier, you have a Dougie Hamilton, you have some really other good pieces that you can also push their buttons and try to get the most out of them, I think is a good opportunity for a young coach on his second stint. I think that you do learn from your first go around. And the fact that he did coach arguably, you know, one of the greatest players of all time and Leon Draisaitl, that's another check mark in the box of dealing with superstars. And there was a lot of talk about whether or not Connor McDavid was going to want to sign and extend with the Oilers because of the lack of success that they have had. So I think that forced the Edmonton Oilers upper management to make a quick decision because they're scared of losing Connor McDavid, which I don't blame them. So Jay Woodcroft would be probably my first choice. Second right behind him, which I know that everybody's not on board, but I am actually extremely high on, is Sheldon Keefe. So Sheldon Keefe ends up being fired after the Toronto Maple Leafs lose in the first round again. And I think some of it's unfair because he's another guy who kind of reminds me of Jay Woodcroft, who has succeeded everywhere he's went. I get it that Toronto is the biggest market, the biggest hockey hotbed in the world, and there is a lot of pressure on those players there. Nobody has won in Toronto since 1967. Are you telling me that none of these Toronto teams have had good coaches or have had coaches that could put a team over the edge could be a Stanley Cup winning coach. I don't believe that for a second. You look at Pat Burns. You look at Pat Quinn. These are good coaches. So I don't hold that against Sheldon Keefe. You're not the first. You know what I mean? There's many coaches that have gone on behind you that haven't been able to bring Toronto the Stanley Cup. So, but what I do, I look at his career and I look at how he start, and he was, you know, he started coaching in the OHL for the Greyhounds, and he turned that horrible organization around to turn him into a powerhouse. So they finished his first full season at 44-17-7. He ends up losing in the second round of the playoffs to the Erie Otters, and that's a team that Connor McDavid was on. So in 2014-15, he ends up, he goes 54-12-2. So he gets awarded the Matt Layden Trophy as the top coach in the OHL, and he's also named the CHL Coach of the Year. So that's all of the Canadian Hockey Leagues. He gets rated, he gets awarded the Coach of the Year. He ends up getting a job after that with the Toronto Marlies, the AHL affiliate of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's the head coach of their team, and he coaches the team to its first Calder Cup in 2018. And he wins American Hockey League coach, it's the first time they've won in the AHL. So ideally he probably would have liked to have, or I don't know if he would have liked to have, but ideally he's young enough to where if he would have coached for the Marlies for a couple more years, he could have really got his feet under him. And then Mike Babcock ends up getting fired by the Maple Leafs. And the following day, Sheldon Keefe signs a 3-year deal with the Maple Leafs. So in his first 20 games, I'm reading his Wikipedia. In his first 20 games, he posts a 15-4-1 record, the best of any coach in Toronto's 102-year history. He ends up losing in the playoffs. And obviously, Toronto has been losing in the first round of the playoffs for what seems like 1,000 years. But you go through his records, and it's like, I don't... Right now, the Devils are in a situation where they need to make the playoffs consistently. Like, I get it. We want a guy that's going to win the Stanley Cup. Let's worry about getting into the playoffs. Let's worry about playing a consistent, good game to where you know what you're getting every night. And, I mean, let's go and check out his record. So, this year, they put up 102 points. Last year, 111 points. 2021-22, 115 points. 2021 was the COVID season. They played 56 games. He won 35, lost 14, and tied 7. So he's finished 4th in the league 2 years in a row, 6th in the league 1 year, and 10th in the league this year. The guy's winning at 67%. He had the highest winning percentage of any coach with 100 games under their belt. But I mean, he's one of the quickest, let me pull this up. He has the second highest winning percentage of any NHL coach with 100 games under his belt. And among all active coaches, he's better than John Cooper, Rod Brind'Amour, Bruce Boudreau, Bruce Cassidy, Mike Sullivan. It's like, he's one of the best coaches in the league. Yes, he has not been able to get them past the first round. I understand that. But it, you know, you look at the Leafs and it's like, was the John Tavares signing that good? That was not his fault. Mitch Marner is a little bitch. Like, he is a guy that plays great all regular season and is a complete no-show and crybaby in the playoffs. And they're going to run him out of town. And if they don't run him out of town, he's a guy that's going to willingly leave. And the stuff that he said after the first round of the playoffs about how we're looked at as gods in Toronto, it's like, that just goes to show you the immaturity and the complete lack of self-awareness that that kid has. And while it's Sheldon Keefe's job to like put his get his arms around his team, it's like, it only goes so far. At some point, the players are responsible for the way that they play as well. But I think that, you know, I really think that he's a guy who, if you put him in any other market and you put him with talented players, there's no reason that this guy cannot be successful. He's going to have a chip on his shoulder. He's handled himself like a man. He's not a pushover. That's in a lot of things. Like, I hear, like, my father, he constantly says, like, I want a guy who's going to be, you know, he's going to hold these guys responsible and be tough. And it's like, he is tough. He is tough. Just because Mitch Marner is crying on the bench like a little bitch does not mean that the coach is not tough and not good. You also don't want to be overboard and be Craig Berube to where nobody wants to play for the guy either. You have to manage that. And that's where I think Woodcroft and Keefe are younger guys who are in touch with the players, the type of players that are coming out now and the way that the league is going. And I think it could be an opportunity for the Devils to take advantage of two coaches that were let go. One, because they were in very demanding markets, and two, because they were coaching two of the best players in the world and weren't able to get over the hump. I think both of these guys would be great choices to get the Devils back in their winning ways, become regular playoff appearance team, and learn how to win in the playoffs. And I do think that they, both of these coaches, have learned from what they've, learned a lot from the losses and from what they've dealt with in two, you know, hockey centric markets over the past couple of years. So I think that both of those guys, to me, their stats speak for themselves. They are very, very successful coaches. They are students of the game. They've been coaching a very long time despite their age. So I think there is a connection between player, when you have a younger coach, there's some connection. Like, most of the coaches in the league are 50 plus. Like 90% of the coaches are 50 plus. Now, those are the two most realistic options, in my opinion. If Mike Sullivan becomes available, if Rod Brind'Amour becomes available, obviously, those would be my two top choices. Rob Brind'Amour being number one, Mike Sullivan becoming number two. I do not think that that is going to happen. I think that Kyle Dubas, who, think what you want about him, I think he is a pretty good GM in the big scheme of things, and I think he's smart enough to know that not to come into Pittsburgh and really, he wouldn't fire Mike Sullivan. You're not going to fire a guy that's been with the team for 10 years and won Stanley Cups and is a legend with the team. Where their disconnect is that Kyle Dubas wanted some changes made to the assistant coaches, and Mike Sullivan is a really loyal guy and didn't want to have to get rid of anybody. So there was disconnect there. And whether or not Mike Sullivan wants to leave the Penguins is a completely different story. So Sullivan does have the option to leave. And if he does, obviously Sheldon Keefe is Kyle Dubas's boy, and then Sheldon Keefe would get the job for Pittsburgh, and the Devils would try to go after Mike Sullivan. And that would work out for everybody. But I think I'm not so sure that I believe that Mike Sullivan is going to leave Pittsburgh. Now, Rod Brind'Amour, on the other hand, I also do not think that Carolina is going to let him walk. But Carolina has always been one of these teams that is very conscious about how much money they're spending. It's always a money thing with Carolina. And you saw that they went out this year and they actually spent a bunch of money at free agency to get Gensel and to get some scoring. Why are they jerking Rod Brind'Amour around going into the playoffs when this guy's on an expiring contract? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, he's a very, very good coach. He would be my number one option. I do not think that he's going to become available. I don't think that Caroline is that stupid. But I could see how it would piss him off that he doesn't have any job security after, you know, the success and the effort that he puts in. And I do think it's kind of corny how all these teams axe their coaches after they lose in the second round of the playoffs or the first round of the playoffs, despite, you know, the effort and the success that they have during the regular season. It's like only one team can win the Stanley Cup every year. So if you're firing your coach because you're not winning the Stanley Cup every year, you're constantly going to have a revolving door of coaches. I think stability is important. At the same time, I do think that some coaches, they lose the locker room and they lose their voice and their message gets old. So I think you have to be smart about how you manage that. But to me, Rod Brind'Amour, if he was the coach of the Devils, I would not be letting him go anywhere. I think he's great for the kids. I think his intensity is good and he doesn't put up with any nonsense. He's just a good old fashioned coach. Couple guys that are totally less likely to get the job, but they're people that I'd like to at least bring up. One is Devils legend, Jay Pandolfo, who's been with, he's been in Boston. And I think that he is a guy that could have a head coaching job in the NHL in the near future. Also, you have the coach from Denver. So, is it David Carl or David Carley? But either way, he is, Denver has been incredible. He's only 34 years old. His record speaks for itself. They won the national championship this year. His coaching percentage is insane. He's winning at over 75% rate the past 3 years. He had an off season in 2020. Oh, well, that was 2020. He went 10-13, but prior to that, he had a 66% winning percentage and a 65% winning percentage. He's a young guy who I think is going to be in the NHL very soon. Also, you have Joel Quenneville. Now, Joel Quenneville, obviously involved in the shenanigans in Chicago. He is going to be reinstated. He's led teams to the playoffs literally 22 times. He's got 3 Stanley Cups. He's second in the NHL in wins, only behind Scotty Bowman. This guy's a legend. Now, I think it was Elliot Friedman that said there's a good chance that Quenneville returns to the NHL, but as an assistant. Now, that's somebody that I might consider talking to if you want to hire a younger coach like Jay Woodcroft. And it's like the amount of information and knowledge that a guy like Woodcroft or Keefe can learn from having a guy like Quenneville alongside him on the bench would be interesting. I'm sure he would want a lot of money. I don't think he's in a position where he gets to pick where he wants to go. I think he's talked about coaching in the Atlantic Division. But he's just another guy with the coaching carousel going on that you might... that is interesting. I'm curious to see what happens with him. So, what was crazy to me was Lindy Ruff. Well, let's move on from the Devils coaching decisions. A couple things that have stood out to me so far. One, Lindy Ruff gets a job as the coach of the Buffalo Sabres. This This seems like the worst hire ever. Buffalo is a team that is very similar to New Jersey. Tons of young talent, especially on their back end. A team that's supposed to be turning a corner. And you're going to hire Lindy Ruff. Why? You have all these coaches out there that you could choose. They jump on, it's like they jump on Lindy Ruff. They don't even wait it out. They don't interview people. They jump on Lindy Ruff. Why? Because Lindy Ruff was a legend in Buffalo? Is that literally it? I think it's an awful move. And it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in Buffalo. But I feel bad. I feel bad for the Sabre fans just because they have a good team. They deserve to win some games. And it's like pretty lame excuse to hire a head coach when you have so much young talent that you're looking to get the most out of. I don't think Lindy Ruff is the answer there. And I think it's I don't know. Ottawa signs Travis Green. Also the same kind of situation. Like, I don't understand what the rush was to sign Travis Green. I don't think that he would have been, like, swiped out from under your arms the way that a guy like Berube or Woodcroft or even Keefe now could be. And they're in the same situation as the Devils, too. They have a ton of young players. Their team that's supposed to be fighting for a playoff spot and then the next generation of NHL teams, and you take Travis Green. Like, I don't get it. I'm happy that they did because it took Travis Green out of the equation to be the Devils coach. But interesting choice to me. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, Brady Tkachuk and the New Jersey Devils, and I'm not really paying any attention to it currently. You know, Ottawa's got new ownership. I think they're going to be willing to spend money. I think they're going to get a new arena. And I'm not buying into this whole Brady Tkachuk coming to New Jersey thing. I get it. He's married to a New Jersey girl and he spends summers here or whatever it is. That's all fine and dandy. You got the Spit and Chicklets guys that are talking about, you know, trading Mercer and a first or Nemitz. And it's like, I don't know. I'll believe it when I see it. If there's anything that goes on around that, I'll be back in touch with you guys. The playoffs to me so far have been really fun. You see the toughness that you need to play with. I mean, you watch the Boston Florida series. You watch the Ranger Carolina series. The Devils weren't built to play versus those teams. The Devils are going to have to add some thickness and some heaviness to the team if they want to start making some noise in the playoffs. One of the guys that is just so annoying that I haven't had to watch in so long, and I forgot how much I hated him, is Tony D'Angelo. Tony D'Angelo is a piece of shit, straight through and through. Man, if that guy could play hockey as good as he could run his mouth and create a scene every time he's on the ice, it's like between the dropping the gloves and trying to fight the entire, you know, and calling out everybody on the team and then the spear, like you're spearing somebody when you're down two games in a series and you're down by a goal and you're spearing somebody and taking a stupid penalty. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's like the guy just likes to run his mouth. He was a piece of shit when he was with the Rangers and he still is. Goaltending. Obviously, we are very interested to see what happens in the goaltending world. As you can see, Swayman is getting all the starts in Boston. I think Ullmark is the guy that I'm trying to target. In my head, it goes Ullmark, Saros. You can't get Askarov. So take that out of the equation. If I could get Askarov, he would be at the top of the list. He's not going to be there. So, Ullmark seems to be, I think he would be a very good pickup for the Devils. He's a guy that is just consistent. He plays the game the right way. He's not too high, not too low. You know what you're going to get from him every night. But one of the things is when you're watching the playoffs, all the teams that are going to make it in the playoffs and all the teams that advance have good goaltending, period. So you look at what the Rangers have been able to do. they've been playing really good, just a whole well-rounded game, but Shesterkin has been fantastic. And then you look at Carolina, Freddie Anderson has not been good. You look at the Leafs, it's like Samsonov played okay, but like Samsonov is not going to win you a Stanley Cup. You need a Jake Oettinger, you know, and I get it. Aiden Hill won the Stanley Cup. And Grubauer won a Stanley Cup. I get it, but it does help to have good goaltending. And that's not to say that one of these second or third, even a third string goalie can come in or a rookie goalie can come in and go on a stretch and play over his head. We saw it happen with Akira Schmid. And let's be real, Akira Schmid might not be an NHL goaltender ever again. So you need to get a hot goalie. The problem with Saros is the money he's going to demand. And when you spend that much money on a goalie, it takes away from what you're able to put in front of him. The Devils have the 10th overall pick in the draft. They could, I mean, I'm assuming there's a very good chance that they could move that pick. Get a player that could be a roster player now. But we'll wait and see. First, let's get ourselves a coach. And I think that we're really fortunate to be in the position that we're in right now with who's available. And that's not counting Sullivan and Brind'Amour, to where if either of those are available and the amount of talent that the Devils have on our team and how enticing we look to a coach looking for a new home, we're in a really good spot. So maybe hanging on to Lindy Ruff all this time was worth it. Either way, I miss talking to everybody, and I hope you guys are all well. I hate that we're back into this stage where the off season is the most important part of the Devils right now, and we should be watching Devils hockey right now. There's no reason that the Devils should not be in the playoffs this year. But either way, it was good to get back in touch with everybody. I talked to Patty Shambro, and we're going to try to record something at some point. And I hope everybody gets ready for a wonderful summer. And once the Devils hire a new coach, we'll dive more into that. You've been listening to the Trap Podcast. My name is Bill Bosch. Peace.